to another session, third session. If you were here last night, you will remember that we did not finish last night's session on the history of music. And so we're going to dive right into that and see if we can get that out of the way as fast as we can so that we can go into the subject of how do we discern what is good and what is what God's standards are for music in His Word. So we ended with Crowley dying last night, and he was the one, the father of the Satanic Church, and he dies in person, but he doesn't necessarily die in spirit. A lot of these different groups, as we said before, really loved him because he was the source, pretty much, of their power, of the way that they could become popular and famous. So the 1950s, that was in 47 that he died. The 1950s, rock and roll started developing from rhythm and blues. So we remember Robert Johnson, the founder of blues music, and which led into rock and roll eventually. but blues music is the foundation for blues and jazz, is the foundation for pretty much all of the music that we have today. It laid the foundation for a lot of the beats that we have today, the rhythmic elements, and all of that stuff. Rock and roll is very interesting. It's still very prevalent in, today. We'll notice the Rolling Stones, still a name that a lot of people love. Rock and roll is was developed. How many of you know where the term rock and roll came from? So back in those days, they had cars that weren't as sturdy as our cars. Depends who you ask, because my dad will be like, "Oh, they don't build cars like they did back then." But they weren't like our cars, okay? And you didn't need to wear seatbelts back in those days either. This is the 1950s we're talking about. Rock and roll is pretty much, it came from the term of what, when someone turned on music in their car, what dating couples did in the back of the vehicle. They would have sex. This is going to be, I'm going to have to bluntly state some things. But they did that, and the moving around and everything created the car to rock and roll. And that is where that music, the term for that music, came from. It's funny how we flippantly use rock and roll, and rock and roll elements are in so much of our music. But rock and roll was, that's what that music did to young people. If you remember what Robert Johnson did about said about women, he loved playing his blues music because it made women do things that no one had ever noticed or had never seen people do that in public before. And this is the 1950s, okay? 1950s was tame compared to what we have today. 1954, Bill Haley and the Comets was the first all-white band. As I said before, a lot of the blacks developed this music kind of, and the whites kind of weren't sure what they thought about it. But it was the start of the all-white band, and that's when rhythm guitar was added to a lot of the music that was used back then and is to this day. Then we come to the man, Little Richard. He's considered the father of rock and roll. It was kind of developing along the way, but it's funny how something's kind of developing and then one person just grabs it and flies with it. And he was the one that really made rock and roll a popular thing back in those days. He said, "My true belief about rock and roll is this. I believe this kind of music is demonic. A lot of the beats in music today are taken from voodoo. From the voodoo drums. If you study music and rhythms like I have, you will see that this is true." He also he also sold his soul to the devil. He also was one of those people that wanted power and wanted fame and bought into that lie. hopefully this works. We are going to do a little sound clip here. Actually, it's the wrong. You just bear with me here. Actually, it's on my other computer. Just 1 minute. I think it's important for us to hear this just so that we know what we are talking about and so we can pick it out in other music. It's pretty crazy how much this is in so much of our music today. So this, before this starts, we're going to just pray, okay? Father in heaven, we thank you for this time together to look at your word and to see what you have to say about music. And Father, as we play some of these samples, Father, I just pray that you would cover us with your blood, and Father, that you would be glorified through this this seminar. Father, just protect us, Father, that the devil wouldn't have a foothold in our lives. We thank you. In your name, amen. All right, this is Voodoo Beat, okay? I think this is important, as much as it's complete demonic, but as much as this is, we need to understand how this is playing out in our music of today. So it starts out, this is like a 30-minute piece, but this is what they would have played back in the African tribes. When they came over as slaves, this is what they would have been playing. It progresses, but if you notice polyrhythmic elements, what I mean by polyrhythmic, we talked about polyphony, or polyphony, different ways of saying it. Polyphony is where you have a bunch of melodies all harmoniously put together into one piece. Polyphony. So polyphonic music is basically comprised of melody. It happens the same way in rock music, in beats. If you notice, there's like a whole bunch of different rhythms going on within one big set session. So this is later on. They add a little bit more, they're adding cymbals and that sort of thing. As well as chanting. Do that. Incredible drumming. This is later on, getting closer to the end of their whatever it is. So you see what it is, just noise. Pretty much just noise. The devil knows, though, that is what helps you lose your mind. Now we are going to play Little Richard, who is the father of rock and roll, and we're going to play a piece by him. Is he coming through? Not really. Not the whole thing, because there's a lot more going on than that. No? Okay. Maybe the Lord knows we shouldn't hear that. Very, very much the same. He adds a whole lot of growly sounds, but it's very much the same kind of music when it comes to the bass of it. Very, very, very interesting, I find. But he says how music is so satanic. The late 1950s, you could see the effect of what this music was doing on society. All of a sudden, sex wasn't that big of a deal. Society was a lot more decadent, dangerous, immoral, obscene. People weren't scared of talking about issues, certain subjects. Government, if you noticed in government as well, it was very much the I want to do what I want to do atmosphere. And if you remember what Aleister Crowley said, do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. And that's what Aleister Crowley's foundation was for the the satanic religion. B.B. King came along the scene during that time. He loved music. He loved what it did to women. And then Elvis Presley came along. Elvis the Pelvis, as people called him. He became the leading figure in rock and roll. He was the one that kept it going. His suggestive stage antics made him popular and enormously controversial. The church really warned against this man. And if you go on YouTube and just watch him sing his music, he's actually more tame than what the contemporary Christian artists are of today. They would not film him from anything lower than this. So he was filmed from here on up because of the way he moved when he was playing his music. Very, very interesting. But society still had morals. The media still had morals, and they wanted to protect society still. He brought together country, pop, rhythm, and blues like it was never seen before. Society had never seen this kind of music before. He had a riot every time that his concerts ended. Very interesting. Music does things to you. More than anyone else, Elvis gave the young a belief in themselves as a distinct and somehow unified generation. He really, really pushed the do what thou wilt mentality and philosophy. And people were going with that, and it was changing society like society had never seen before with the youth. The music talked a lot about doing what you want, regardless of what parents say or the church. He's very popular for his song "I'm Just a Rebel," and that's what he believed. Everyone's just a rebel. He didn't want you to obey your church, your parents' authority. The 1960s, the movement away from the conservative America continued. Music was really shaping society and the foundation of America. Drugs became a major part, and became a major part in white man's life. Before it was more the satanic realm. The black people were a lot more into the drugs, but now it's becoming very popular within the white community. Drugs, music, and rebellion, which is the slogan for rock and roll, started a new movement known as the counterculture. You don't need the government, you don't need church, you don't need your parents, you can be you. Let's be authentic here, and stop trying to be like everyone else. Do what you want to do. And that's where the hippies came from. The hippies with their long hair and their crazy dress and all of that stuff very much came on the wings of, I want to do what I want to do, and no one's going to stop me from doing what I want to do. And it's still to this day that mentality when it comes to hippie. Satanism was very much on the rise. And then there was a little time of almost silence. Not silence, but music was still doing its own thing, but it wasn't going forward at a fast pace. And during that time, a man by the name of... No, I'm sorry. Not yet. This is a little later. Sorry, I'm ahead of myself. But Satanism was on the rise. Aleister Crowley, the hippies, loved Aleister Crowley. He was thought as the father of the hippie counterculture movement. He was considered the unsung hero of the 1960s. He taught that his satanic doctrine, do what thou wilt, should be cloaked under the lie of love. He wrote this in his book. Do what you want, but cloak it under love. Very, very interesting, because that has permeated our society, and it's still here today. You can do what you want. We have peaceful protests down in the States. There's a lot of peaceful protests with the whole thing of Trump coming, and there weren't some so peaceful ones, but... And we're noticing a lot more. People are being kinder in the way they protest, or kinder. It's cloaking things under the law of love. You're still rebellious. It doesn't change the fact that you don't agree. And then the Beatles came rolling into town. Little songs like I Want to Hold Your Hand, they started singing, and which is a seemingly harmless group. But they transformed and came to be the embodiment of progressive ideals. In other words, this is what we're going to be. And they started changing the way young people thought. The Rolling Stones were also very popular at that time. So the Beatles and the Rolling Stones were at the same time. The Beatles pushed the counterculture on the youth, and the youth fell for it. They embraced Aleister Crowley's philosophy, "Do what thou wilt." A lot of the talk back then was, "We'll decide what goes on. We'll decide what we do. We'll decide what we smoke. We'll decide what we listen to, how we dress, how we talk, how we act, where we go." It became, "Do your own thing." Take yourself to the church of today. We hear that a lot. Minister doesn't have to tell me what to wear. They don't have to tell me what I'm supposed to sing, what I'm supposed to listen to, that I'm not allowed to go to a movie theater. Church doesn't have to tell me that stuff. I can do my own thing. John Lennon said, "Christianity will go. It will shrink and vanish. I will prove it. You just wait. We are more powerful than Jesus ever was." John Lennon was from the Beatles. Derek Taylor said, "The Beatles are completely antichrist." Derek Taylor was the one who was behind the Beatles. He was the one with the money, the one that made them popular, the one that got them their gigs and really supported them. He said, "The Beatles are completely antichrist. I mean, I am antichrist as well, but they are so antichrist that they shock me, which is not an easy thing." If you study some of these people and what they did, it'll shock you. They had a guru tour with them, the Beatles did, and in between, during their breaks, when the Beatles would be resting or whatever, they would have a shaman, is what the name of it was, who would teach. They had a shaman that traveled around with them and would teach the young people mysticism, Eastern mysticism, and that's where we started getting our yoga and our meditation and all of that stuff. It started stemming from these young people who embraced this satanic counterculture. But it was done for a very specific reason. The Beatles didn't just bring this dude along because he had good ideals. They knew why he brought him along, and they knew that they could shape the youth. Lennon later said, "I've sold my soul to the devil." The Rolling Stones had a lot of sympathy for the devil. They even wrote a song about it. It says, please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. I've been around for a long, long time. I've been around for a long, long year. Stole many a man, soul and faith. I was around when Jesus Christ had his moment of doubt and pain. Made damn sure that Pilate washed his hands and sealed his fate. Pleased to meet you. Hope you guessed my name. They wrote a song. A lot of their songs actually had Satan in them, just so blatant. There were a lot of Satanist groups that came along the way during that time. Iron Maiden, Led Zeppelin, David Bowie, Sammy Davis Jr., Mick Jagger, Sting, Ozzy Osbourne. There's a lot of different people in different groups that were just blatant Satanists. Anton LaVey came along. He established the official Church of Satan. He wrote the Satanic Bible. So this man was a very, very big... Aleister Crowley was like his dad. And Anton LaVey is the father. Aleister Crowley is the father of the Satanic Church. Anton LaVey is the one who made it happen. He actually established a physical church of Satan. And there's not just one of them. There are a lot of them spread throughout America. So he established the official Church of Satan, wrote the Satanic Bible, promoted a lifestyle of self-indulgence. Remember, do what thou wilt. Desires were meant to be fulfilled. He said, there's a beast in all of us, and that needs to be exercised, not exorcised. In other words, it doesn't need to be ridden of. It needs to be used. You need to use your beast. Do what thou wilt is the Church of Satan's official philosophy. and is their doctrine. So if there was a slogan for the Church of Satan, that would be what it is. It's very fascinating to me how you can go and find energy drinks, and they all talk about some form of beast, some form of monster. We have Nos. We have, you know, if you think of the energy drinks of today and start looking at the symbols that are on those cans, I'm telling you, Satan has permeated our society in ways that we don't even know. David Bowie said, rock has always been the devil's music. In 1960 to the 1980s, suicide rose 400%. Unwed couples living together rose 536%. This is 20 years. Pregnancy among girls between the ages of 10 to 14, which was never seen before, rose 553%. Prior to 1960, there were only two sexually transmitted diseases. Then there was 25. Violent crimes rose 995%, almost 1,000% violent crimes. I'm telling you, the music shaped society in a very big way. In the 1980s, by the time the 1980s hit, disco was established and rock splintered into more defined categories. That's when we started having soft rock and hard rock and grunge rock and all of these different rocks. And now today we don't even know if our music is rock music. The minister talks about rock music, but I don't think mine's rock music. We don't know. Basically, rock music stands for a very broad genre. You can have hard rock, and there's labels with rock in them, but grunge music, for instance, blues music, jazz music, it's all rock. It's just a different element of it. That's when country started as well. Country was starting to make its rise. Disco and dance began to develop, and MTV was born. And folks, this introduced an entire whole new philosophy and a whole new way of Satan into the youth. Because now you weren't just listening about it. You could actually look at it. MTV stands for Music TV. Music videos, basically. Madonna became the little girl's idol. Madonna is a... we're not sure if she's a lady or a guy. I think he's a man. But the phrase, live and let live, took over to do what thou wilt. So all of a sudden, instead of do what thou wilt, it's a little bit old. It was just let live and let live. Whatever happens, happens. Do what you want kind of thing. Michael Jackson said, I'm a tormented person. I have a lot of demons inside of me. My pain is as big as my joy. During that time, Michael Jackson was at the top of his charts. And he said his pain was as big as his joy. Michael Jackson talked to dead people in a room with moving walls and mirrors, just like Aleister Crowley did. Aleister Crowley had a special room where he would call back. Michael Jackson would go into this room and the mirrors would move and he would play his beats and talk to Aleister Crowley. Aleister Crowley was his mentor. And believe it or not, a lot of these rock musicians talked to Aleister, because when you're in the demonic world, you can talk, you can bring up someone dead. And we see that in the Bible when Saul wanted to talk to Samuel. He said later, I'm a slave to the beat. MTV said this, the strongest equal you can make is emotionally. If you can get their emotions, or sorry, the strongest appeal you can make is emotionally. If you can get young people's emotions going, make them forget their logic, you've got them. At MTV, we don't just shoot for the 14-year-olds. We own them. And they believe it today as well. It's working. Guess what in the 1940s? This is very interesting. Talking about music shaping society. In the 1940s, what were the five biggest problems in schools? Number one was running in the halls. The biggest problem in a school. Number two was tardiness. Number three was spitwads. Don't spit at me. That's what they had to deal with. Imagine. Number four, biggest problem in the schools is missing the garbage can. And number five was chewing gum. 40 short years later, the number one problem in schools was murder. The number two problem was theft. Number three problem was rape. Number four problem was drug. Number five problem was alcohol. Folks, in 40 short years, you cannot listen to this stuff and say it doesn't affect you. It will affect you. You will move with whatever you are. Your body is made of the food you eat. And it works in this realm as well. What you listen to, you will be made that way. You can't listen to it and not expect to be influenced by it. The 1990s, more choices. There were more choices than ever when it came to music. There were three things that were very common back in the 1990s, or that were starting to become a very prevalent thing. Number one, the live and let live philosophy. Overtly sexual content. Things were getting... My dad said the first time he saw a woman with her top cut down to here or whatever, and that was like the 80s or 90s, and he was so shocked. But it's hard to imagine a life without that, because we've grown up, us younger ones have grown up in that, and so we just expect it. But back in those days, society still had a little bit of morals, but they were lessening. It was overtly sexual content, because the music was talking about sex all the time. That's what the music was. It's either talking about Satan, doing what you want, sex, drugs. Society had that mindset then, and it played out. Heavily accentuated beats and rhythms. Homosexuality began to be pushed in a very, very big way back in the 90s. Grunge started taking over, and I don't know if any of you have heard grunge, but it's a very guttural. I don't even know how people can talk by the time they're done. Like, you have to literally almost be possessed in order to sing this guttural, ugly, ugly sounding stuff. But Kurt Cobain, lead singer of the band Nirvana, said it was his personal goal to get stoned and worship Satan at every concert he did. He was a big Anton LaVey lover. And Nirvana was band of the decade. But then we have someone came along named Tori Amos, and she was a pretty lady. She didn't have all of this ugly stuff going on like some of these other bands were. And Satan is so deceptive. So now this was getting out of hand. So what does he do? He comes up with someone who's pretty and innocent. And the girls are all like, oh, she's who I want to be. Mom, can I listen to this music? And they're like, well, I don't see anything wrong with that. Yeah, sure. And they start out, the beginning of their songs are often very nice, but as they get on into their career, they start influencing young people. And throughout society, if you notice, well, we'll get into that later with Justin Bieber and some of those people. But Satan does awful and he does good very, very well. So he gives two options. You can take this, but then he'll just carry you along. Once that music person starts moving and changing, guess what? That whole society just moved and changed with her. And so she came along the scene. Behind all of her beauty, shall I say, she said later that she wants to marry Lucifer. I'm going to just see if I can pull this up. Might work in this next one. Who knows? She wrote a song at the start of her career called In the Arms of an Angel. Sorry, that's not Tori Amos. Sarah McLachlan wrote In the Arms of an Angel. Tori Amos wrote the song Crucify and said how she wanted to marry Lucifer. She also said, he comes and sits on my piano when I play. And then Sarah McLachlan came along, and she was another pretty person. And she wrote this song, and a lot of Christians loved it. Why is music coming out of... or... okay, it's not letting me. Or God's not letting us. Who knows? She wrote, "In this sweet madness, oh, this glorious sadness that brings me to my knees in the arms of the angel, fly away from here." Those were some of the words in that song. You wouldn't think that's a really that bad song. But then later, in the same album that had that one, she has a song that just completely rips God apart. It's called "Dear God." She says, "I don't believe in heaven or hell, no saints, no sinners, no devil as well, no pearly gates, no thorny crown. You're always letting us humans down. The walls you break, the babes you drown, those lost at sea and never found, it's all the same the whole world round." So you have someone who's talking about the angel that Christians fell for. A lot of Christians listened to her music then and let their guard down. She states, "I think the devil has gotten a bad rap. The devil is the fallen angel." She was talking about angels in that song. "The one who was willing to embrace his dark side, whereas all the other angels were in total denial. The devil is more like us." In other words, she's saying Lucifer was smart. He decided to get out from God. The devil's more like us. If you're smart, you'll get away from God. Marilyn Manson came on the scene. He was ordained in the Church of Satan. He mutilated himself on stage. He would rip up the Bible when he was performing stuff. This was in the 90s. This isn't that long ago. He would be on stage and he'd rip up. He'd just start tearing pages out of the Bible. He would spew blasphemies against the Lord Jesus Christ. His t-shirts declare, "Kill your parents, and I love Satan." You can still buy those t-shirts. He held evangelistic crusades all the time. They were just in the form of concerts. There's a t-shirt he sells. You can get it. It says, "Warning, the music of Marilyn Manson contains messages that will kill God in your impressionable teenage mind. As a result, you could be convinced to kill your mom and dad, and eventually, in an act of hopeless behavior, you will kill yourself. Please burn your records while there is still hope." In other words, he mocked people who were against his kind of music. Someone said, "Music is the strongest form of magic." And I don't know if anyone has really understood what we are trying to do to lure people in. Once we got him, we can give him our message. That, I think, was Marilyn Manson who said that. Oh, yes, it was. Yeah, these are all quotes from him. And another one, he said, "Hopefully I will be remembered as the person who brought Christianity to an end." He also said, "If somebody kills themselves because of our music, then that's one less stupid person in the world. Raise your kids better, or I will be raising them for you." And parents, that ought to send chills up and down your spine, because there is a generation of youth that are being raised by a lot of artists out there. As parents, we are not just letting our children, our young people, find their way. God has placed them into your home for a reason, and you are not being controlling by protecting them of this danger. Teach them. Don't just take music away and say, "No, this is wrong." Teach them. We do not have teaching on this like we should, which is why we have so many confused people. In 1990, the country music was very much on the rise, and us, we like our country. Taylor Swift started out, Britney Spears, Justin Timberlake, Disco Flats, Miley Cyrus. All the whole satanic philosophy of "do whatever you want" permeates country and Western country music so heavy. You do what you want, you can sleep with whoever you want, it doesn't really matter. 1990s began the thing of alter egos. Now we're starting a new thing. So people didn't want to. People were acting so bad that they literally had to create an alter ego. So That means like there would be you, and then you would create this other person. And so when you went on the stage, you were this other person. But when you got off the stage and went home, you were your original self. And these alter egos were starting to show up because they were being so bad, they didn't want to be labeled that anymore, these people. They were being so wicked. But instead of embracing themselves, they embraced this other person. And this other person was often very much demonic in action. We have Prince. I can't remember the last name, but it was a male singer. His alter ego was Camille. So it was a guy, and then his alter ego was a female. And if you looked up the pictures of them, just ugly, ugly, ugly. Madonna had an alter ego, Dita. And then later, Dita wasn't bad enough, she had to create another one, which was Esther. So she had like three people going on, and depending where she was certain she was one of her alter egos. So it was promoting the do what you want in just a whole nother whole way. Britney Spears had Mona Lisa. She came in the scene as an innocent little girl. And once again, swept a whole generation of youth with her. Christina Aguilera took people with her as well. And her her alter ego was Xtina. And someone said, oh, she's so bad. One of a radio station said, she's so bad, she should be triple Xtina. That's how bad, like that's how wicked she was. Her covers have horns on her head, devil's tails, all kinds of satanic stuff. She said, I no longer want to be thought of as pretty. I don't like pretty. She started out pretty. She started doing self-mutilation. She cut herself in front of people. She said, there's comfort in pain. Beyonce, her alter ego, Sasha Fierce, raised as a Christian. She started out Christian. She wears goat symbols all the time, and if you do any research, the goats are a very big thing. The star, upside down star, is another big thing. Hebrew symbols is another huge thing. It just permeates the covers of these records. But she wore goat symbols a lot of the time. The all-seeing eye, if you ever notice people doing this in concerts, it's the all-seeing eye. A lot of the time, too, if you look on a band cover, and this is happening in Christian covers as well very much, it's one eye. They'll either show their face and there'll be a shadow over here, or they'll just be holding their hand there. It's the all-seeing eye. It's a very satanic symbol. Beyonce and Sasha Fierce said, I have out-of-body experiences on stage. If I can cut my leg to the point that it'd fall off, I don't even feel it. I'm so fearless. I'm not aware of my force, of my face or my body. Later she said, I killed Sasha Fierce because she was able to be all of that herself. She said, I can now handle who Sasha Fierce was. This is Beyonce talking about her alter ego. And then we started with rap. And rap, in my mind, is like the worst of the worst. It's what it's born out. We don't even have time to go into where it comes from. But rap hip-hop artist Eminem started coming on the scene. He was hailed by the Billboard magazine as the best artist of the decade. Slim Shady was his alter ego. And he said, Slim Shady is just the evil thoughts that come into my head, the dark, evil, creatively sick part of myself. He put that on Slim Shady. In 2009, so he's still around, he's doing lots of stuff. 2009, he became the best-selling rapper of all time. He is said to be one of the most influential figures of the 21st century in the world. A rap artist. In 2010, his music had 194 million streams more than any other artist out there. In his song, Kill You, he speaks about murdering and raping various women, including his mother. In another song, he graphically raps about killing his girlfriend and having their small child help him get rid of her. You cannot listen to rap. A lot of the time, you can't even understand it, but if you actually looked at the lyrics of rap, they are so vile, you can't even speak them as a Christian. And folks, can we switch that? And that culture of rebellion, the reason it is so rebellious and so satanic is because of the beat. It's you don't be that without something making you that, right? And can we take that medium and put Christian lyrics to it? You know, we have Lecrae out, and we have Christians falling for Lecrae. Lecrae has some good lyrics out there, but can we put them to such a vile medium and glorify God or teach from that? Is that a good platform? Eminem's also has another counter ego, Rihanna. No, I'm sorry, I'm mixing up my notes. Eminem then, what happened to help get, society didn't really like rap necessarily, and I don't know if you've noticed that some songs actually start out rap and then start changing, and then change into an actual song. If you listen on the radio, if you're ever in a store or whatever, sometimes there's so much rap, and then all of a sudden it just, there's the song. And so what Eminem was doing was he wanted to get a broader base, and so he started using regular artists, and Rihanna was one of them. Another good singer, really good singer, but went to that person and said, hey, can we hook up, and we're going to make a song then, part rap, part whatever kind of rock music that the artist was using. There's Justin Bieber, there's Taylor Swift, there's Carrie Underwood. Oh goodness, I can't even get into these. We don't have time for this, but it all permeates. Do what I want was what the message of a lot of this music was, or all of this music was. Carrie Underwood wrote a song. She's like, well, I dug my key into the side of his pretty little souped-up four-wheel drive. Carved my name into his leather seats. I took a Louisville Slugger to both headlights. Slashed a hole in all four tires, and maybe next time he'll think before he cheats. She also wrote the song, Jesus, Take the Wheel. Is Jesus taking the wheel in her life? Can we actually listen to this stuff from people that are clearly not living a Christ-centered life? 1 Timothy 4, now the Spirit speaketh expressly that in the latter times some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils, speaking lies in hypocrisy, having their conscience seared with the hot iron. Folks, if our consciences aren't seared, there is possibility of them being seared. We cannot be too careful. Paul said to the Corinthians, be not deceived. Evil communications corrupt good manners. Awake to righteousness and sin not, for some have not the knowledge of God. I speak this to your shame. This was Corinthians. You can't even compare Corinthian culture to our culture of today. And Paul spoke very strong to them. Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it that he might sanctify it. Church is you, with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. Oh, we could look at that verse. We could talk about that verse for a whole hour. Not having a spot. Just a spot. Or a wrinkle. Or any such thing. God's coming back for a church that he wants to be righteous. That he doesn't want any kind of sin permeating that church, his bride. You are the bride of Christ. Be careful what you do. Be careful where you go, what you listen to, what you look at. God is looking for a people, though the heavens may fall, that can say, not my will, but thine. That can take what Jesus said. Jesus was subject to God, to his Father, and said, not my will, but thine. Satan came to Jesus and offered him everything he offers these satanic people. You just worship me, I will give you all of the kingdoms of the world. I'll give you wealth. I'll give you food. I'll give you everything. I'll take care of you. I will be your dad. And he comes to us today as well.